In the construction business and can't find what you need? Quality Supply and Tool has served Hoosiers for over a quarter of a century. Tom Hawk is the branch manager of the Indy location on South Harding Street.
We've always been big on keeping our shelves fully stocked of inventory of industrial-grade tools, concrete, masonry products, as well as the necessary accessories to help get the job done. You don't have it, you can't sell it. Our experience allows us to help with getting the pros as well as the weekend pro taken care of.
Quality Supply and Tool also has locations in Bloomington, Lafayette, and Jeffersonville to help you think outside the box store.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it.
Beyond the Bricks with jQuery and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box store on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
Yes, indeed. Back for another year of Beyond the Bricks. Thank you so much for tuning in. Excited for another year of looking back at the names, the personalities, the statistics, and of course the audio that makes the Indianapolis 500-mile race and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway the greatest race and venue, respectively, in the United States. How are you? My name is Jake Query. I host a radio program on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis, known as Query & Company. Eddie Garrison, who helps out with this program and putting it together, is the producer of that show. And the other person that you will hear on this program, I'm happy to introduce, Mike Thompson, who has worked in various capacities around the Indianapolis 500 from a media standpoint and a historian standpoint as well. And Mike, I simply like to call you an audio historian because you have collected fabulous audio that we will play over the course of this program. And this, I believe, year four for the show?
This is year number four for us, actually,
which is,
believe it or not.
And here's what's amazing about it. And I will allow you, Mike, to, for our listeners who are new to the program, where have they been, to let them know exactly your background and how you have been able to accumulate the amount of audio that we are going to be able to share with people as we kind of interweave this tapestry of drivers and mechanics and different factors of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in their own words, because you have the audio library that is second to none when it comes to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Well, one of my big passions has always been, the history of the 500 and my mentor is Donald Davidson, who, you know, we both love. And I just grew up loving the 500, and there used to be a tape trading community where you would, people would say, hey, I've got the, qualifying coverage of 1969 on tape. And, they would send you those things. And there was, kind of this, community of people. And I just would, I'm a person who likes to preserve history. And I have a large archive of photos and negatives and slides and things that I've been buying over the years, just because I want that history preserved. I mean, I bought the racing pictorial negatives because I didn't want them, to end up in the trash, basically, and things like that. I just want to preserve history at all costs. And so as far as the audio goes, as I have the opportunity to, somebody says, oh, I've got these, these old tapes that we recorded WIBC for 8 hours in a day, in 1982, do you think there's anything valuable on there you'd be interested in hearing? Yeah, I want that. So then I go and I convert those things. And I've had so many different people, a gentleman, he approached me and said, that's where we got our favorite clip that you and I just discussed off air, here he comes and there he goes. A guy brought me these very, very brittle, what they're called paper, basically they're paper, reel to reel, files and stuff. And I had those digitized, so we would have those preserved for history of these midget races from the 1940s that nobody has heard, that's just my background. Is I have a passion for preserving history and preserving, both the visual and the audio history of the sport.
Well, one of the things that allows us to do, Mike, is to introduce listeners to maybe drivers that they are previously unfamiliar. And in addition to that, to remember those drivers that people may be well aware of, but are no longer with us, sadly and unfortunately. And that begins the topic here of show number one tonight. It is the inevitable reality that whenever you have a gap of 1 year between an Indianapolis 500 and the next, you are going to have those that unfortunately are no longer here with us physically, but only in spirit when it comes to the Indianapolis 500-mile race in terms of great contributors, fans, whatever it may be. And that includes the topic of our first guest here on the 2024 version of Beyond the Bricks. He was born in November, as a matter of fact, November the 11th of 1967 in Paris, France. But at just 9 months old, his parents relocated to the country of Brazil, which is the country with which he would carry the flag throughout his illustrious racing career that brought him to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway perhaps earlier than people realize. Talking about Gilles de Ferran, Mike, and the reality is that Gilles de Ferran, I think many people think of Gilles de Ferran simply as the 2 years that, you know, in the post-split when Roger Penske brought his team back to run with Helio Castroneves and Gilles de Ferran. Many people may not realize that Gilles de Ferran actually had made his debut at the Indianapolis 500 just a little over a half a decade earlier than that.
Yeah, I think people forget that de Ferran wasn't a rookie with Penske at some time. I do think that people forget that 1995, because he was only in the race, as we'll hear in a few seconds, he was only in the race for a few seconds in the race, basically. But I do think people forget that he was with Jim Hall. He was very fast with Jim Hall later in the kart season, but it is easy to forget that he did make his Indianapolis 500 debut in 1995.
Gilles de Ferran is, and I think you'd agree with me on this, Mike, you know, we talk so much about, obviously, drivers that from yesteryear that were no longer with us long before you and I were around, but Gilles de Ferran is one that obviously the two of us were in the same era as Gilles de Ferran. And I think it's very safe to say that in terms of true gentlemen and just understated champions in the way that they carried themselves, Gilles de Ferran would be absolutely at the top of that list. He was an accomplished race car driver before he came to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, driving in British Formula 3. He began that in the early 90s. He won the championship there in 1992. He then ran in Formula 3000 in 93 and 94. And did so, all of it, with just a very tactical driving approach, both in and outside of the race car. A true gentleman, which we will get into. But he made his debut in Indianapolis, as Mike had mentioned, in 1995. Gilles de Ferran running for Hall Racing. He began and qualified that race in the 29th position. And unfortunately, the day was over almost as immediately as it began. The 1995 Indianapolis 500.
The Menard team side by side, already into the short chute. So far, so good. Scott Brayton. Oh, we've got a major crash! A major crash against the outside wall in the short chute.
Now let's throw it to turn number three and Larry Henry.
Yeah, Gilles de Ferran just going by here. He has the right front tire bent up, almost up in the cockpit. The back right tire is flat. He has it under power, and he's trying to get back to the pits, but he is going very slowly with smoke coming out of the back.
So again, that was Jerry Baker, by the way, with the call of the accident itself. Bob Jenkins, the chief announcer. Larry Henry there in turn number three for the Indianapolis 500-mile race in 1995. Gilles de Ferran in that race would finish in the 29th position. Interestingly enough, Mike, that would be the only of the five starts that Gilles de Ferran would make at Indianapolis where he would bring his car home in a lower position than where he started. Because as I mentioned, I think when you talk about drivers that just had a real kind of engineering feel for feeling out a car over the course of a race, then Gilles de Ferran certainly fits that criteria.
Definitely. Gilles de Ferran was a tactician, you know, kind of a little bit in the Al Unser senior mold. You know, you didn't want to see Gilles de Ferran on the lead lap at the end of a race because he had a good chance of beating you, because he was very, very good at being a strategist. And as you mentioned, you know, a very analytical mind, one of those type of drivers, very calculating. kind of in the Al Senior mold.
He would finish 14th in the points championship in 1995, but he also would finish the year strong. Gilles DeFerrin for Jim Hall Racing at Laguna Seca, picking up the win.
And the first win for Jim Hall since 1991, as the checkered flag is unfurled. He acknowledges the flag, comes under the Toyota Bridge, and Gilles DeFerrin has won it.
Paul Page on the call as Gilles DeFerrin wins in 1995. Mike, as often happens in racing, that would be kind of the introduction onto the scene of a driver that would become a major, major player into the early 2000s within open wheel racing in North America. And a lot of times, and I mean this as no disrespect towards, you know, obviously Hall Racing, but as a driver's introduction is made, more opportunities come their way for bigger and more funded teams. And that certainly was the case for DeFerrin.
Yeah, and in DeFerrin's case, you know, he could have won at Cleveland even earlier than he did. I mean, he was the dominant car at Cleveland in 1995 and had an accident late in the race, or else he would have won, you know, in earlier than he actually did at Laguna Seca. Then he did win at Cleveland the next year in 96. So Cleveland was a great track for Gilles DeFerrin. But DeFerrin's situation was even a little different because Hall Racing at the end of 1996 – they closed. So Gilles DeFerrin was out of a job either way at the end of 1996. It wasn't a situation where he was leaving, looking and saying, I want to kind of move up the ladder. He had to move up the ladder because Hall Racing decided to close their doors at the end of 96, even though he had, you know, won a race for them in 96. So, Gilles DeFerrin was a hot commodity at the end of 96 because he had started to establish himself as a top 10 driver in the kart series, absolutely, because he had won a couple races and, you know, finished second at Portland and, you know, had other really strong runs where he could have won.
He was the runner-up in points in 1997 for Walker Racing. As a matter of fact, running full-time for Walker in 97, 98, and 99. And then in 2000, the opportunity when Roger Penske makes the call. Gilles, of course, had the opportunity to drive with, at the time, it was thought going to be Greg Moore, who had signed with Team Penske to drive in 2000, but Greg Moore was tragically, fatally injured in California in 1999 to end the season. So that meant that Elio Castroneves became the teammate for Gilles DeFerrin. And one of the things, Mike, that I always found interesting and entertaining about that duo, both of them, mega talents inside the race car, but in terms of just their overall persona outside of it, I always thought DeFerrin and Castroneves were a good pair because they were so opposite of one another just in terms of their overall energy level, if you will, outside of the race car.
Yeah, and that would have been the same with Greg. Greg obviously was a very, very bright personality and a little bit more of a swashbuckling kind of driver. As we talked about, Gilles being more of a calculating driver, Greg was a little bit more of a, you know, swashbuckling to the front type driver. But you're right with Elio. You couldn't find two personalities that are more different than Elio and Gilles DeFerrin. Always both with smiles on their faces, but two totally distinct personalities with Elio and Gilles.
But of course, both of them, along with Greg Moore, fast drivers, and that's what you want in the sport of racing, it goes without saying. In the year 2000 at California Speedway, Gilles DeFerrin broke the world closed course speed record. Here's how it sounded 24 years ago.
Parker already suggested flat all the way around. First lap for Gilles DeFerrin, 241.428 miles an hour. That breaks Mauricio Guzman's record. That breaks the closed course record. And that puts him on the pole. What a surprise that is.
A surprise, but with Paul Page on the call there, a moment that stands in racing history, Mike.
Yeah, still the closed course record. And doesn't that Honda engine sound amazing? Oh, that just... it just sounds
that
just
thing is
so
screaming
good.
For every ounce of speed it has, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that thing just sounds amazing just listening to it today. And it, you still, the hair on your arm just goes up listening to that thing go. I mean, it was just an astounding time in racing with those speeds they were doing and that that Honda engine, like you said, was just screaming and just amazing, amazing sound that they were putting out. And you know, Jill had a huge bounty of success with Penske. I mean, he was the champion in 2000. He was the champion in 2001. You know, put up some major numbers for Penske, driving that Honda for Roger Penske.
You mentioned the championships in 2000 and 2001, but for Gilles Defferin, the biggest of victories was yet to come. We'll talk about that. We'll let you hear how it happened. All of that when we return to the Bet 365 Race Command Center for Beyond the Bricks.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Even if you don't have a Kroger store nearby, you can still get Kroger groceries delivered that are guaranteed fresh. Order on the app and your groceries hit the road. With prices so low, you won't believe the savings. Get $25 off your first two orders, plus unlimited free delivery for $59 a year with a Boost membership. We'll bring all the fresh groceries you need from the store to your door. Kroger, fresh for everyone. $35 minimum order excludes alcohol and gift cards. Offer valid on delivery only with a digital coupon. Restrictions may apply. See site for details.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Overnight priority, Defferin.
What's Defferin?
Joe, could you come out here, please? This is Walker Racing and Honda powered driver Gilles Defferin. He costs a little more, but he's worth it.
Let's go with Defferin.
No problem.
Billion Gilles Defferin in a FedEx commercial at the peak of his racing career. Welcome back to Beyond the Bricks. We are inside the Bet 365 Race Command Center. Jake Query along with Mike Thompson taking a look back at a driver that we lost in the offseason, Gilles Defferin, who passed away while driving with his son in Florida, as a matter of fact. We will get to that in just a bit, but taking a look back at the great champion of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And it is not often that a driver with the pedigree, with the championship-level team of Gilles Defferin when he came to Roger Penske, has to kind of sit back and take a back seat, if you will. But from an attention standpoint, perhaps that was exactly the case, not just in the first, but the second time that he came to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway driving for Roger Penske, talking about the 2001 and 2002 Indianapolis 500s, because Gilles Defferin and Castor Nevis made quite a splash, but obviously, Mike, it was Castor Nevis that ended up stealing the headlines.
Yeah, they came back in 2001. They hadn't been to the 500 since. It was kind of interesting that Defferin hadn't been to the 500 since 95, and neither had Penske, and they came back together, which was kind of cool. People forget that they ran Phoenix as kind of a tune-up, and Defferin crashed. He didn't seem to have very much luck at Phoenix at times and had a couple different accidents at Phoenix. And they drove really interesting, really all-black cars, which I thought was really cool, driving Penske Auto Center all-black cars. But Elio was kind of more, as you said, in the limelight. And I think Jill at times kind of liked that. It took a little bit of the pressure off Jill with Elio in the limelight, even though, you know, Jill's coming in as the kart champion, Elio as again, kind of the more effervescent personality was, you know, if you remember, Elio kissed the wall early in practice that year, and they kind of made Elio go out and paint over his scuff on the wall. And, And he became kind of this, you know, the personality everybody was you know, drawn to. And I think Gilles liked that because it took a little bit of the pressure off of him.
Gilles DeFerrin in 2001 did lead laps at the Indianapolis 500-mile race. He was the runner-up finisher, but it was his teammate, Elio Castroneves, that won the race. Then in 2002, of course, Castroneves would get win two in start number two in the finish over Paul Tracy in what would become, obviously, a controversial finish. But his teammate, Gilles DeFerrin, was there running with him in the top 10, finishing in 10th. And then it was 2003 when both of them were running up front, but this time it would be the year in 2003 at Indianapolis for Gilles DeFerrin.
This monstrous crowd has come to its feet. White flag is out. Brian Howard shows them one to go as they head into turn number one.
Roger Penske said, pick the chassis you like. One took DeLara, one took G-Force, and they're 1-2 right now in turn two.
DeFerrin had a great chance to win these last two races. Castroneves with a half a lap to try to make history, but he's still five or six car lengths behind Gilles DeFerrin.
Gilles DeFerrin holding him off. Gilles made his debut in 1995. He finished 29th in Hall Racing. It is far Indianapolis 500. He's just a turn away from victory lane.
Out of four, one turn to go. It will be three straight for Roger Penske, but not three straight for Castroneves. For the second time in 3 years, Team Penske goes 1-2. This time it's Gilles DeFerrin winning the 87th Indianapolis 500-mile race. Elio Castroneves is second. Tony Kanaan is third.
Mike King, the chief announcer of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network there with Jerry Baker, Kevin Lee, Mark Janes and Chris Denary, respectively, turns 1 through 4 as Gilles DeFerrin gets the win in 2003. One of the things he did in that race that I think a lot of people might forget is he was running there with his teammate Castroneves. Castroneves, that was the story, going for three straight in three starts. But Castroneves got held up in traffic a little bit. I believe it was A.J. Foyt the fourth in front of him. And DeFerrin masterfully took advantage of when his teammate got checked up.
That's correct. Yeah, he pounced when Elio got caught up behind A.J. Foyt the fourth. Gilles pounced. And one of the things that was brought up in that audio clip that people might not remember, which was really interesting that year, was that DeFerrin ran a G-Force chassis that year, and Castroneves ran a DeLara, which seems really interesting today. To think about the fact that Penske ran two different chassis in that race. And Penske basically, you know, Mr. Penske said, pick which chassis you like and you're more comfortable with. And DeFerrin took the G-Force and Castroneves took the DeLara and they finished 1-2. It's just very interesting to the fact that they chose different chassis that year and ended up 1-2 in different rides. Basically.
And I remember what a storyline it was when DeFerrin, because they did not arrive in the month of May with that decision made. It was in the middle of the practice sessions when DeFerrin ultimately decided to go with the G-Force. And that was quite the storyline in that particular day. Hey, listen, you know, Gilles DeFerrin's going with the different, he's going with the G-Force, Castroneves. There was a lot of conversation about it. Obviously, it paid off and DeFerrin was able to get the Indianapolis 500-mile win in what would be his final Indianapolis 500-mile start. But Mike, that is not to say that Gilles DeFerrin did not stay busy within the world of racing and stay as a major mainstay in different capacities amongst racing, even after his racing career as a driver.
Yeah, and he's one of the guys who won his final championship racing start. He won the season finale, the race that was marred by the serious accident that hurt Kenny Breck, but he won his last, you know, IndyCar / championship racing start for Penske at Texas. And then he drove for his own sports car team. He started a sports car team and he was paired with Simon Pagenaud. And those two, they had a lot of fun together. I remember seeing them run at Mid-Ohio I was at Mid-Ohio to see them run. And they had a lot of fun as a team together for DeFerrin Motorsports. And then he was a team owner in IndyCar as well with the Dragon Racing program deal that he did. And then he was a team principal in Formula One. So, I mean, Gilles DeFerrin kept busy, very, very, very busy in racing.
And, you know, DeFerrin, this past December, December the 29th of 2023, Gilles DeFerrin was at a race course in Florida when he suffered what was a fatal heart attack, or at least the, I believe that that was the determination of what took place for DeFerrin. And he is given a lot of credit, I think, Mike, for the fact that he was with his son and DeFerrin was aware of the fact that something was taking place. And Gilles DeFerrin's daughter has said that he saved the life of her brother and his son by knowing and making sure that the car, you know, that he had pulled over as they were racing together. And sadly, he did not survive what took place on December the 29th. But it sent, obviously, shockwaves throughout the sports world, the racing world, and sentiments of sorrow, and reflection, but also of gratitude for those that were able to be around Gilles DeFerrin. That includes both Mike and I, which we'll get to in a minute. But what about Elio Castroneves, the man that will forever be linked to Gilles DeFerrin because of the dynamic nature in which they had come back to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway triumphantly, had raced alongside one another, and had won Indianapolis 500s essentially alongside one another. Elio Castroneves on his teammate Gilles DeFerrin.
We're going to miss him for sure. But my memories with Gilles is from the beginning of our era with Team Penske was us having our first meeting, which took us about an hour and 45 minutes, which means Gilles was an hour and 40 and I was 5 minutes. So it was certainly his personality. It was completely different than mine. Even that he was trying to be funny, which wasn't funny, became funny. So it was one of those guys that, big heart, very, very intense, incredible knowledge. And we had a lot of good moments. Myself, Gio, and Cindric, we called the three musketeer. Nothing could stop us. And for sure, it was there was a lot of memories for sure. And he's the first guy or first person actually that close in my life that it's not going to be with me or with us anymore. So, but yeah. We just got to keep it going. And I'm sure he's up there right now, redesigned the gates of heaven, you know, so trying to make a modernize or electric or whatever it is. And Kika as well, probably is helping him to tell him what to do and who to talk and make sure that he go and talk to the big Lord. And I'm sure he's having fun up there.
Elio Castroneves talking about Gilles DeFerrin. Mike, I know that we both have our own, I guess, experience with Gilles DeFerrin that I'll share only because I think it gives glimpse into who he was as a person. I have talked before on this program, for those that are unfamiliar with it, but one of the projects that I undertook a handful of years ago was a racing helmet to try to get it signed by every winner, obviously every living winner, of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. And in that capacity, this was after Gilles DeFerrin had been involved in IndyCar in terms of a week-to-week basis from ownership and other such things. He was working in Formula One at the time, I believe, when I got him to sign the helmet. But I had gotten a hold of Gilles DeFerrin and asked him if he would be, you know, how I would be able to get in contact with him so that he could sign the helmet. And he had said, I'll let you know if there's, you know, if I'm going to be around somewhere. And I kind of assumed, Mike, that it was something that I would have to re-pursue, if you will. It was not long after that where he then messaged me back, and I didn't know Gilles DeFerrin. It would be disingenuous to say that I knew him well. I knew him very peripherally, only in the capacity of working on the radio network for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And he did then reach back out, so he took the time to find the original email, I guess, to say, hey, I'm going to be at the IndyCar finale at Sonoma. I don't recall the year, I apologize. But so I took the helmet with me to the racetrack and made contact with him at the racetrack, and he signed the helmet. And in doing so, Mike, the only thing I would say was that he was almost embarrassingly like shy about signing it, as if to illuminate that in his eyes it was a true honor to be listed as an Indy 500 champion. And when he looked at the helmet and signed it, you could tell that there was almost an uncomfortable nature, because he just was not the type that would have sought any sort of a like glory or, you know, having his name be up there with the Mario Andretti's and the AJ Foyt's, which it is, because he is a champion of the greatest race in the world. But he truly was an understated and very humble, kind, soft-spoken, generous, and appreciative human being.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. He was all those things. And when I, in my previous position, was running the Hall of Fame autograph session at the facility there in the infield, we would have Indianapolis 500 winners were allowed to be there, invited to be there rather, and, you know, Hall of Famers. And so, you know, Gilles was invited, and he would come every year. And one of the things we would do is we would ask the Hall of Famers and the Indianapolis 500 winners to sign a few items that we would do as giveaways for a project I used to run called Founders Day. So on March 20th every year is considered Founders Day. It's the day that the Speedway was incorporated. And so we, on Founders Day, we would give away prizes every year. And, you know, just for fans, you know, to get prizes. And it was a really neat thing that we did for the 3 or 4 years that I was there at the facility in the infield. And so I asked Jill and all these different guys, and I said, hey, could you sign these couple things, you know, for fan giveaways? And so then they each signed them, and everybody was gracious about it. And then after the event, Jill came back up to me and he said, you know, these are for fans, you know, how do you do this? And I said, well, you know, we have people on Twitter and they register and we, you know, do giveaways. And he stopped and he grabbed a stack of hero cards. And I'll never forget this. He signed, it had to have been 50 hero cards. And he just stood there and signed them. And he said, if they're for fans, I want to give fans more, you know, more to, as giveaways to show my appreciation for fans. And he stood there for another 15, 20 minutes that he had to do. And he just kept signing extra hero cards and handed me a huge stack of them and said, you know, please give these to the fans to show my appreciation for them. And I'll just never forget that, because he didn't have to do that. I mean, he had already signed a couple items I asked him to do, and he stayed extra just because that's who Gilles DeFerrin was.
Gilles DeFerrin, as I'd mentioned, was born on November the 11th of 1967. He passed away on December the 29th of 2023. His departure would be 2 days before the passing of another racing legend, who actually was making his second of four Indianapolis 500 starts in the year that Gilles DeFerrin was born. Our look back on a former Gold Gloves boxer turned racer in a variety of different series when we return to Beyond the Bricks.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
We know emergencies can happen anytime, anywhere. With 14 ER locations throughout Central Florida, Orlando Health is ready to provide expert care if you're facing one. When you choose Orlando Health, you'll find a place where chaos meets calm and uncertainty finds answers, giving you more reasons to choose well. To learn more about our high-quality emergency services, visit orlandohealth.com/ER.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you're ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
You go 200 miles an hour from morning till night, you'll find out just how strong your deodorant is. I'm Cale Yarborough. I drive race cars. This is my deodorant, Old Spice Stick. Hey, Old Spice isn't just strong, it's 24 hours strong. Old Spice Stick is the only leading deodorant that says it right on the label. 24-hour deodorant protection. You want a deodorant that lasts longer than you do, this is the one.
24 hours strong, Old Spice deodorant and antiperspirant.
Cale Yarborough. Before he was talking about Old Spice, he had a vast background that ultimately would lead him to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the subject here of Beyond the Bricks on this episode number one for 2024 inside the Bet365 Race Command Center. Jake Query along with Mike Thompson. Thanks so much for joining us. Cale Yarborough was born March 27th of 1939 in Timminsville, South Carolina. And as we had mentioned, we unfortunately lost Cale Yarborough on the final day of 2023. But Mike, not after, or I shouldn't say, I should say, he passed away after a long and diverse career in many, many sports, but notably in the world of racing. He had a variety of interests, and that included racing about anything that had four wheels and a steering wheel.
Yeah, and I mean, it's amazing when you look at Cale Yarborough's record. I think people sometimes, he gets overshadowed, obviously, with Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt and some of the other guys. But, I mean, if you look at the fact that Cale Yarborough in NASCAR's top series, he won 83 times in only 560 starts. It just shows you how dominant he was. I mean, he didn't always run full series, you know, full seasons, the complete schedule. So that's why he didn't even win more championships than he would have probably, because the guy was just dominant. I mean, I think that that's an amazing record. I mean, he won 55 times between 1974 and 1980. Just shows you how good Cale Yarborough really was.
He came from very humble background, very humble beginnings, but eventually would become a high school football star in the state of South Carolina. He also was a boxer in gold gloves. And as Mike talked about, a variety of different ways in which he made himself known in the world of racing, but stock car obviously is that with which he is most known. But in 1966, Cale Yarborough made the first of four starts at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and talked about being on the 500 starting grid.
That is known as the biggest race in the world, so it was quite an experience, and I'll never forget. I was sitting in that Indy car waiting for them to say, "Driver, start your engine." My racing career started in a soapbox derby and down a hill in Darlington, South Carolina. And I was sitting in that little Indy car, and all of a sudden, I was sitting in that soapbox derby car, looking down that hill, and I was looking down the straightaway at Indy, and it was just a thrill. I said, "Look, look where I started, and look what I'm fixing to do."
In 1966, Cale Yarborough would start 24th in the Indianapolis 500. He would finish 28th. But that's not to say that he didn't have a seismic impact just on the name recognition alone, the different fan base. And you saw what Indianapolis meant to Cale Yarborough. Speedway historian emeritus Donald Davidson on Cale Yarborough's runs in the Indianapolis 500.
Cale Yarborough drove in four 500s, and in fact was only entered four times, and the brief version is that 66, 67, 70, and 71. Cale's first year was 66, and he drove for, actually, Rolla Volstead was in partnership with Jim Robbins, and he drove the car that had was new in 64, driven by Len Sutton, and then 65 by Billy Foster, and that was Cale's ride for 66, and he didn't get very far.
Pat Dunn waves the flag, and the Golden Anniversary 500-mile race is on! The number one turn at Mike Ahern.
And here they come to the number one turn, accelerating out of the back and taking the lead. Well, it's either at...
We have an accident on the main stretch, Mike.
Got it.
Hold it. We have a terrible accident on the main stretch. A very bad accident on the main stretch before they reach the turn. Lou Palmer is closest to them. We can't count how many cars
are out of the race. Number 39, also out. Number 96, parked against the wall. All drivers seem to be getting out of the equipment that's parked immediately in front of us here.
Came down the straightaway, and there was this accident that actually involved his teammate, Billy Foster. And just a huge accident going into turn one. No injuries except for Foyt climbing the fence and cutting his thumb as he went over. And I remember the one of the documentary films that was made of that race, they had several voices of drivers, and you didn't see them. You just heard the voices. And Cal Yarbrough is quite distinctive because he says, "Oh, no, it can't be." And anyway, he was out of that uninjured, as were the rest of them. And in 67, he was back to drive for Volstead with Bryant's sponsorship. And he had a little bit of a difficult day. There was a couple of spins, and the final one was within sight of the finish when he tangled with Mel Kenyon. And Kenyon was running in ninth.
The yellow's out, Luke. Hold jockey. Number three, Ron Carroll.
All right, Sid, and we've had three cars involved back here on three. I don't know just exactly how it happened, but it was coming into number three, and there are three cars involved. It's car number 21 first, car number 10, Bud Thingelstad, who spun around several times, but he's back out on the racetrack. Gail Yarborough in car number 21. The car's up against the wall. He immediately jumped right out and is across the track, and he is all right.
And they both spun down to the inside. Kenyon stayed at the cockpit. And again, I haven't watched this for years and years and years. But Cal Yarbrough gets out of the cockpit and goes over to Kenyon and then very quickly turns around and then walks away. And I'm just assuming that Mel Kenyon probably said a very un-Mel Kenyon-like thing to him. And so anyway, the finishing position was 17th. And in 71 and 72, he drove for Gene White. And in 71, he was teammates with Lloyd Ruby in both years. And boy, they really hit it off. And Cale dropped out late in the 71 race to get a 16th place finish. And then in 72, with the Bill Daniels GOP special, painted red, white, and blue like an American flag, or similar to an American flag, and he finished 10th, which was by far his best position finish. And then that's the last time he was here as a driver.
Donald Davidson talking about Cale Yarbrough. As Mike had mentioned, Cale Yarbrough's NASCAR career dominant, 55 times in NASCAR. He won with Junior Johnson, running between 1974 and 1980. He was the first to win the championship in three straight years in NASCAR's top series, but not afraid to try new things. In 1975, he joined Richard Petty, Buddy Baker, David Pearson, Bobby Allison, and Darrell Waltrip to cut a legendary country music album. Each driver sang on the other's songs, and each got a turn as a solo act. And aren't we glad they did? It gave us Cale Yarbrough singing Hank Williams' classic, Hey, Hey, Good Lookin', which I believe makes a return appearance on Beyond the Bricks.
Hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me? Saving all your time for me. know I've been tooken. How's about keeping stay company? I got a hot rod Chevy and a $2 bill. Know a little spot right over the hill. So let's pop in the dance is free. If you wanna have fun, come along with me. How's about cooking something up? How's about cooking something up? How's about cooking something up with me?
Cale Yarbrough singing, "Hey, hey, good looking." When it comes to cooking things up, Mike, he did exactly that in one of the more iconic moments in NASCAR history in the 1979 Daytona 500.
Yeah, I mean, I think he might be more famous at times for a race he didn't win than the races he did win, with that tangling with Donnie Allison and the famous fight, and that really helped propel NASCAR to new, you know, heights of popularity. One of the most famous races in the history of racing.
And of course, half the country was snowed in the Northeast, and they were watching the Daytona 500 and thought, wait a minute, guys don't like what happens on a racetrack, and they get out and fight, I can get into this. And it did, in fact, take NASCAR to new heights in its popularity. 83 wins, though, for Cale Yarbrough in his NASCAR career, as Mike had mentioned, in just 560 starts, and passing away to complete 2023. Gone, but certainly not forgotten. There are a number of drivers that fit into that, Gilles DeFerrin as well, and more that we will talk about tomorrow as we take a look back at some of the names, the drivers, the personalities that have made racing what it is and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway their contribution to making it the greatest facility in the world. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Bricks.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.